Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah.
Welcome to another March Madness edition of the USC Triple Double Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, and I'm joined, of course, by Mr. Triple Double himself, Connor Morissette. Connor, we had an exciting weekend. We got some March Madness in the Galen Center. The place was rocking. We got to just start with the atmosphere. What did you think overall of the weekend affair, the USC women of Troy hosting the first two rounds of the tournament? They played Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and then they took a care of Kansas in the round of 32 game, and now they have moved on to the Sweet 16. But I got to start with the atmosphere. I thought it was electric. What was your take on you know, the way the crowd came out to the Galen Center?
I thought it was awesome. The place was jumping, and the most significant part of all of it was after the game against Kansas, I think Lindsey Gottlieb talked about how when she took the job, some of the administrators at USC said, you know, no one comes to these games, right? She was like, well, looks like we'll have to try and change that. And she certainly has with USC, especially these last two games. But even before the tournament, the fans were coming out in full force. So it's just awesome to see. And it really felt like even more fans than some of the bigger men's games that I've been at. And the crowd is so into it. You see a lot of families. It's an awesome environment. I'm excited for the future of the program for sure. Don't want to get ahead of myself because there's still some big time basketball to be played this season, of course. But looking ahead to the next season with the recruiting class USC has and Juju Watkins coming back, I don't think this is going to stop anytime soon. People who have jumped on board this season, I think they're going to be on board for the next few years, as long as Lindsey and Juju are around, and then we'll see what happens after that. But it's an exciting time to be a USC women's basketball fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, there was a Saturday afternoon game was the first one. Place was packed. On Monday, it was a 7 p.m. night game. And at the very beginning, I'm like, this is a little disappointing. You know, I thought it would be a packed house. But it was the Monday, it was the LA traffic there. You know, you see people start streaming in. And by the time, you know, midway through the first quarter, it seemed like the place was packed. There were probably a couple seats left, but over 8,000 in attendance. Absolute going bananas for this USC team. So that wasn't just like, hey, they had people in the stands, because that's what it felt like in that Bronny's debut. A lot of USC fans came out to see Bronny. But when Bronny wasn't in a game, people weren't paying attention. It didn't feel like, you know, it just felt like there was moments of silence during that game. That was not the case this weekend for the women of Troy. The fans were going crazy. I thought it was a knowledgeable fan base. You know, we saw when India Otto, with about 3 minutes left in the game, fans start chanting Otto, Otto, for the former walk-on senior guard who's, you know, at the end of the bench, has played in six games all season. This is not someone that any Fairweather fan would know who it is. And to hear her getting chance for a name, that was really cool. And then to see her come in, obviously, was pretty awesome as well, and do what she did. But to see the fans, probably their loudest cheers on Saturday were when she made her two back-to-back buckets. And that just shows you that the fan base is knowledgeable and, you know, we're willing to give that love to her. I thought it was really cool. You mentioned that Lindsey Gottlieb talked about it. She also talked about how after that game on Monday that, you know, opposing coaches were negative recruiting. Like, why would you want to come play at USC? No one's going to come watch you. And, you know, she would have parents telling her that, like, this is what they're telling us. You know, how are we supposed to believe that it's going to be any different? Just watch me build it is basically what she could have told them. But also, I thought it was really cool to see what Mackenzie Forbes said. And she said she didn't want to leave the court, you know, and how much she loves her teammates. She's only been here, you know, this is only her 1 year at USC, but she wouldn't trade, you know, Juju Watkins said she wouldn't trade, you know, her teammates for anyone. She loves everyone here. Mackenzie Forbes said, you know, the experience has been incredible for her. And she just wanted to savor every moment. She went into the student section to celebrate. Then she came afterwards. She came into the section behind the bench because that's where her parents had come down the aisle and went into the stands as far as she could get with the restrictions and stuff that around the stadium as far as security. But, you know, she was just soaking everything up. And that shows you what the atmosphere that was created, but also the environment around this program, the culture that's been built, that there was this crazy environment that gave USC a definite boost too, because, you know, that Kansas game gets really close in the third quarter, and then suddenly a couple buckets go your way and the crowd gets into it and USC is able to roar away from Kansas, unlike Michigan a couple days earlier. So I thought the atmosphere was the number one thing I wanted to start with, just because I thought it was pretty electric and I didn't know exactly what to expect going into it. You know, the rivalry games against UCLA, men and women's, always are going to be outstanding. The fans will be outstanding. But other than that, you're always like, we'll see. Even when USC men's have played Arizona at times, so there's just not been a packed house. You're like, this is surprising. You know, when USC's been a ranked team playing Arizona, there's been a couple games where it's just not completely sold out. Like, how is this possible? But this weekend, it was outstanding. Great job by the marketing team and everyone else to get people in the stands. I thought the experience around the arena seemed like fans were super enjoying it. Ton of Juju gear everywhere. You also saw, you know, they had a big inflatable for March Madness. They had, you know, different things for people to do. But just everyone just kind of milling around before the games. If you kind of walked around, you know, everyone was just buzzing, it felt like.
Yeah, for sure. And Juju gets a lot of the cheers, of course. And India Otto got a lot of the cheers over the weekend. But there's a lot of Kayla Padilla cheers, too, as a local product from Bishop Montgomery. Whenever she winds up to shoot a three, crowd goes, oh, and then when it goes, oh, it explodes. So people love her. They love Caitlin Davis. There are some crowd favorites, too. It's not just, okay, we love the walk-on. We love the best player. Other people on this team have the admiration of the crowd, too. And that was another takeaway I had.
Yeah, definitely. For any first-time listeners, the USC Triple-Double Podcast is a podcast focused on the men's and women's USC basketball teams. We will be covering the women's, but we also got to talk a little bit about the men's because there's some big time news brewing, Connor. So we'll talk about that in a second. For, you know, if anyone wants to, you know, please like, subscribe, review the podcast, your favorite podcast listening platform. We appreciate all those things. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can always send them into podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you're putting the triple double or the basketball pod in the headline to make sure it gets directed to us instead of anyone else, because we have such an illustrious selection of shows for you guys. So make sure you're checking out everything that we have available. The Peristyle has been buzzing all weekend. Huge recruiting weekend for football. Women of Troy going crazy in the Galen Center. Then we find out, and it's kind of trickled in and out, that Andy Enfield appears that he will be leaving USC to take another job to go to SMU. And we've heard rumors of it and kind of been back and forth. We haven't get a full confirmation of it. Nothing is official. It sounds like the official word is going to come out after April 1st. And I've asked around. It sounds like that's probably a contract triggering date for something, whether it be part of the buyout, whether it be something else in the contract that will be triggered in or out, that's part of the reason why there is this hold, even though it sounds like it is going to be, you know, it's pretty much a done deal. Now, we say it's pretty much a done deal. Have seen things fall through like this when, because time can kill deals. That's, you know, that's a common saying. But looks like all signs are pointing towards Andy Enfield taking the job at SMU. And a lot of the fan base is not upset. It feels like this is kind of maybe a great move for both programs. What's your take on it? What's your thoughts on if this move does indeed prove to be true?
Well, I just look to the roster next year, and I think if Andy were to come back, USC just has so many holes. And so people, you can love or hate Andy Enfield based on the last few years and just what he's done over his 11-year tenure. I get it. Sometimes the teams maybe have been a little bit more talented than they've shown in the NCAA tournament. He did have that Elite Eight run with the Mobley brothers, of course. So I get the fan frustration, but I think a lot of people are happy to see him go because next year's roster is not going to be very good. It's the perfect time to have a fresh start, bring in someone new. And even if that new coach doesn't win a lot in the first year, because USC is going to have to build so heavily through the transfer portal, there will at least be some buzz that there's someone new, where I think if Andy Enfield is retained, USC would have to recruit the portal really hard. And I don't envision the team being that good next season if he were the head coach. And I think it's, like you said, shotgun, a good move for both sides. Enfield will go to SMU. They'll be in the ACC for the first year. He will get paid a little bit more, I believe, than what he's getting at USC right now. And there's the difference in the income tax, of course. So he'll be able to put his mark on a new upcoming program that historically hasn't had much success. Clean slate for him, and now clean slate for USC. I envision him leaving for sure. You're right, though. Based on what we heard late Wednesday night from the USC side, it's not 100% done yet, but people reporting who are connected with SMU are saying it's expected that he will go to SMU. And I'm kind of getting that sense too. The whole program has just really gone dark. And I think the longer that they stay silent, it's really hard to come back from recruits and coaches being like, hey, like, what's going on? Are you going to stay? Are you going to go? And just getting stonewalled. He's gone, in my opinion. I don't think you can come back from that.
Yeah, and the decision to go to SMU, now Andy Enfield is from the East Coast. You know, he grew up basically in coaching as far with Florida State under Leonard Hamilton. So he's going to return to the ACC there. So I think that's a big draw for him to be back in the ACC in that fashion. USC, obviously they're going to the Big Ten, so different style of play as well. And USC's rosters recently were not really built for Big Ten play. You know, just as far as their bigs were going to get beat up, you know, no one on the roster right now or the last couple of years is going to be able to defend Zach Edey, like that type of player. And you saw USC struggle with the physicality of Michigan State in the NCAA tournament last year. So, you know, so USC gets a fresh start in that regard. Got to give kudos to Andy Enfield, what he built at USC. I know some fans, you know, want to say he didn't do anything. And this year, it's just unfortunate the injuries they had. I would love to have seen what this year's team could have done if they were healthy. We would have got to see, but this was the culmination year. This was the year where Boogie Ellis comes back. Your leading scorer comes back. You're bringing in the number one player in the country. And so this was supposed to be the year that you build up to. A one-and-done talent plus your leading scorer who could be one of the top scorers in the nation. And showed he could do that early in the season before he got hurt. But everything, just the train fell off the tracks. You know, one wheel slid off. Bronny James has the heart episode in the summer. That sets them back. They can't practice for a few days. And then it just felt like it snowballed throughout. It was supposed to be, you know, the summer was supposed to be a big buildup because they're going on this trip to Europe. It's supposed to be able to get an opportunity to get some extra games in together, bond, and the team had great chemistry and just never could put it together on the court because it felt like every couple of days there was someone new that was leaving the was not able to practice, or someone that was coming back from practice. So they never found that continuity. So it was disappointing that this is the season that it ends on. But you got to give the flowers to Andy Enfield for the program he took over, which was atrocious, and to turn them into a consistent winner. I mean, 20 wins isn't what it used to be. Now that everyone's playing 30-something games a season, but 20 wins in 7 of his 11 seasons, you know, it would have been he had gone to 3 consecutive NCAA tournaments leading into this season. Would have been 4 if you count the 2020 season that was cut off. USC was definitely making the tournament that year. So, you know, and they had the Elite Eight run. They had that to turn USC back into a destination for big-time recruits. You know, 5-star recruits, McDonald's All-Americans, those type of players were not coming to USC under Kevin O'Neill. So it was, you know, there was a resurgence of that, and, you know, it became a destination for kids around the country that would want to go somewhere. So now we'll see if another coach comes in and can build upon that with USC going into the Big Ten, or does this become a setback? And if you don't get the right coach, you go into a new league, things don't work out right, and couple of years from now, you're back trying to hire someone again. And you see that way too often in college basketball. I feel like that is way more common in college basketball than any other of the primary sports in college athletics. It just feels like hires are more difficult in college basketball to get right. There's only a set, there's a small group of elite dudes. And then after that, it's risers and fallers. And I think it's partly just the product of having, you know, a 13-man roster, and, you know, one guy girlfriend breaks up with him and he has 2 bad weeks of basketball, you know, your team's not the same type of thing. And one injury can derail an entire season. Or if you have a season like this year, you know, the entire season can be off the rails because of injuries and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what direction USC tries to go, you know, when this is official. If, honestly, with the delay here, if USC knows that it's happening, I wouldn't be surprised if they're already, you know, putting in the work right now, interviewing people, talking to people, doing all the back channel stuff. Obviously, Jen Cohen is going to have a list of names to begin with. Every AD keeps a list for every sport of names that are on their list. And then it'll be interesting to see where she goes with the hire. You know, Mike Hopkins was who she tethered herself to at Washington, and that obviously did not work. So, you know, she's made some really good football hires. Let's see, you know, she can go out and get a really good basketball coach for USC if this does indeed go down the way it is looking like it's going to.
We're going to have a hot board list of candidates when it is official, but my number one name, so a little bit of a sneak peek for the listeners here on the podcast into our VIP hot board, my number one name would be Eric Musselman from Arkansas, and number one realistic name. He could be given a pay bump.
I see how you're trying to sneak that in, you know, knowing what I'm going to say next.
Correct. I think Musselman would be the best guy, and I think it's realistic. You could give him a pay bump, give him a little more than he's getting at Arkansas. They didn't have a very good season this past year, the Razorbacks, but in the years before, a couple Sweet 16 or 2 Elite Eights, a Sweet 16 at Nevada, he had a lot of success before that. He's been a head coach in the NBA. His resume is really good. He recruits Southern California. His top recruit is from Sierra Canyon this year. I don't know if he'd be able to flip him to USC, but I think that would be a potential flip for sure with Isaiah Elohim being a local guy. So Musselman, to me, I think immediately elevates USC's floor. People get excited about him. He has a lot of energy. He's passionate. Again, I don't know how good they're going to be in that first year because the roster has so many holes. But he's a guy who you said tether yourself to. I like that, Chuck, and I'd like to tether myself to Eric Musselman. He's my top pick.
Now, Eric Musselman is a little crazy. He's out there. let's go ahead and throw that out there. So it'll be an adjustment period, especially because Andy Enfield is super buttoned up. You know, Andy Enfield will scream and holler on the court and stuff, but he's super mild-mannered when he's chatting, you know, in his press conferences and stuff like that. He might throw some snide comments and stuff in there, but Musselman will rip his shirt off and jump up on the scorer's table after a big win. So a little bit different than Andy Enfield in that regard. So we'll see how the, you know, if it takes some donors stepping up, you know, how do they feel about that? You know, where's that money coming from type thing to pay him? Now we will say that the potential of SMU hiring Andy Enfield away means that they would have to pay his buyout to USC. It's been rumored around $16 million. I'm sure that there could be a deal worked out, and that might be something the April 1st thing is dealing with. I know that Andy Enfield and Jim Cohen have a pretty good relationship. So, you know, if both sides think it's a good move for both sides, then, you know, they might work to lower that number or whatever it may be to make this an amicable separation and, you know, possibility. I'll give you my number one pick. And I said, you know, you look at the women's basketball hire, you look at the football hire, were these picks that people were like, yeah, that's nice. That's a feasible hire. Yeah, that's an easy one they could go out and try to do. Eric Musselman is a name that a lot of people think, yeah, this seems like a move that could be made. No one thought Lincoln Riley was a move that USC football was going to make. No one thought that Lindsey Gottlieb was a move, you know, to hire her away from the WNBA, from the NBA to come back and coach. No one thought that. So go get Jay Wright. No one thinks you can go get Jay Wright, and maybe you can, but you have to at least go out there and try. He's the best coach that is not coaching right now. He's the best coach that is available currently. He's probably the best coach in the nation right now. I don't know who else you would put up against him. I mean, Patino is up there. If you can get it, if you're just talking about coaching and whatnot, and a couple other Kelvin Sampson and a couple other pieces, but who else has national championships? Jay Wright is the guy that is available. Now, he quit coaching because of the era that it is. I think that's a big part of the reason why he retired at Villanova. But being in LA, having the opportunity with Southern California recruits, I think that it might be something that could lure him out, and maybe he's just jonesing to get back on the court, that type of thing. You see that occasionally. I don't know that for sure he's a Bill Cowher, where everyone asks, oh, is this the year that he's going to get away from broadcasting and come back to coaching? I don't know necessarily that's Jay Wright. He does a phenomenal job, and he looks great. I mean, look at those suits. Those suits would look great in the Galen Center. I'm just saying. My number one is you go make Jay Wright turn you down. Now, if that happens, then you move on and you go about it. But you have to make him say no. And I will say, now, it was a different regime, the Brandon Sosna and Mike Bone era. But I was told that Lindsey Gottlieb told USC no like four times. And they kept coming back. Like, are you sure? Are you sure? How about? And eventually, it ended up switching, and she became the coach at USC. So that is, you know, you have your tier zero names, as I think Mike Bone or Sosna, one of them put it. You have tier zero. These are can't miss hires. Lincoln Riley is one of those. Lindsey Gottlieb is showing that she obviously was one of those two that you keep coming back to as many times as you can, and then you go from there. So Jay Wright would be the guy that I would put on the board, and Connor's just mad because he won't put it on the hot board. But Lindsey Gottlieb could be another name. I think that is super intriguing that you do. I don't think that you would want to do that because then you cut yourself off at the ankles for your women's basketball program, especially with how well things are going with Juju. But, you know, if this move was 2 years from now when Juju was leaving, like, that would be super intriguing. You'd be like, could Lindsey Gottlieb come over and coach the men? Because I think she has all the chops to be a men's basketball coach. I know it's not happened. I think there's been one or two occasions at lower levels. But I think she's someone that man or woman, wants to play for her. You know, the way she coaches and the way she fights for her players. So that would be a super intriguing one too, but we'll talk about that a different day. Those are our top candidates. We'll talk more about this when it's official. We'll probably have another podcast and whatnot then. But let's move on, Connor. We got to talk about the women. This is all about the women after that little segment because they're the ones still playing. They're the ones on fire right now. And they're the ones that we have to recap because they're still playing. Now, the women of Troy won their opening round game against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, 87-55, 35 points in the third quarter. Just want to point that out. You know, which is more than Texas A&M Corpus Christi scored in the first half. But USC pulls away in this game slowly. They could jump out to a 21-2 lead, just keep pulling away. Outstanding games, Juju Watkins, outstanding games, Mackenzie Forbes, Indiado comes in, has the big buckets. Huge win for them. First win in the NCAA tournament since 2006. That just seems crazy. Connor was still in diapers at that time. I mean, that's that's wild. Right?
Not quite.
How old were you?
In 2006?
Yes, 2006.
11, not...
So
not
Connor diaper. Was still in diapers. then USC, they advance. They play Kansas. Kansas, dramatic comeback against Michigan. We're watching that game. You know, 11, I think it was 11:30 start time or 11 a.m. start time to that one local time on Saturday. So a little bit early, and, you know, Kansas came on late. They outscored Michigan. I think it was like 35-17 in the overtime or in the fourth quarter and overtime. They hit a three. Zakiya Franklin hits a three with about 12 seconds left, and then Michigan can't score the final bucket, so it goes overtime, and Kansas just dominates. So USC takes them on. They went 73-55, and the game was both not as close as that and also much closer than that. So USC jumps out to a quick lead in that game. They're up by double digits in the first quarter, and then slowly Kansas starts coming back. Third quarter, Kansas goes on a 9-0 run and is in within 1 point. And you're like, wait, how did this happen? USC was dominating early, and then USC answers. 17-2 run led by Juju Watkins, hits a three, gets fouled in the next possession, makes a couple buckets. She misses a shot on the next one, but Cleary, she's drawing so much attention. Clarice Akinwafu gets aboard. She gets fouled, couple free throws. Suddenly USC builds, and they pull away and win the game. Defense was outstanding in the first quarter, outstanding in the fourth quarter. 9 points each for Kansas in those two quarters. In between, not so much, but you hold an opponent to 55 points and you have Juju Watkins and Mackenzie Forbes on your team, you feel pretty confident that you're going to win that game. So what stood out to you? Let's go to our triple-double. Three positives for you from the Women of Troy's matchups this past weekend, where they were able to dominate against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, get their first win since 2006, and then they were able to beat Kansas to advance to the Sweet 16 for the first time in 30 years. 1994. Woo! You were not even in diapers then.
That's correct. I wasn't born then, so there you go. Well, got to start with, I mean, where, I guess I don't know where to start, but I'll start with Clarice Akinwafu. She came in that third quarter, the very end of it against Kansas, and just flipped the game. Her defense was incredible, had all those blocks, rebounds. She, that substitution coming in for Rhea Marshall just changed the game. So I want to start with her. Give her a shout out. We heard from Lindsey Golley saying after the game, yes, she's a reserve, but we'll take her against any big in the country. So I thought that was really cool to hear. 9 rebounds, 3 steals, 6 blocks, 5 points, even a couple buckets. She's not known for her scoring ability, but 2 field goals as well. She completely changed that game for USC, allowed Juju to have some open shots, Mackenzie Forbes to have some open shots, and she was a woman possessed in that game. Really, really impressive performance from her. Awesome to see. India Otto, the shots in that first game were incredible. Feel like I need to shout that out. The three, well, it started with a layup, and then the three, crowd erupts.
First 2-point really, bucket really ever cool. for her.
Yeah, really, really cool Galen Center moment. Mackenzie Forbes, 3-point shooting against Kansas. I felt like in a game where USC only shot 37% from the field, the fact that Mackenzie Forbes from downtown was 6 of 13. All 6 of her makes were from 3. That was significant. The other ones, she was 0 of 6 from 2-point range. So just not very efficient, but efficient from 3-point range, which really helped USC ultimately won on the game. And then the 9-point fourth quarter for Kansas, 9-point first quarter. You hold a team to 9 points in 2 quarters, you're probably going to win. Special bonus up. Shotgun, how about House of Victory paying Caitlin Davis' student loans off from Columbia? That was posted on our board yesterday by House of Victory director Spencer Harris. Really, really amazing contribution from a donor to step up and help out a key member of the women's basketball team. I wanted to make sure we included that too.
Yeah. When's somebody going to step up and pay my student loans? What the heck? I was hurt by that. I mean, that was awesome for Caitlin Davis, but I'm hurt by that. And, you know, I want somebody to pay mine as well. No, that's really cool. So, you know, I think that sends a message. That would be something I would put out all over the place. That sends a message like, yeah, you want to be a grad transfer? Look at what can happen if you come to USC. Go to Ivy League schools, get your degree, do all this. That would be something even Maybe you put that out there to, you know, the Ivy League transfers you might identify as potential transfers this season, off season. I agree with everything you said there. A couple more to mine. I put complete roster. So you talked about some of the different pieces. I just thought that they had so many people step up. Now, Clarice Akinwafu was a game changer in that fourth quarter, late third quarter. She comes in, and it was crazy how she comes in. They hit two free throws. And then after that is when USC goes on this big run, 17-2. And her defense was impeccable down low. She was also, had some great offensive rebounds and putbacks and stuff. She missed a couple putbacks, but, she continued to battle at it. She was fantastic in that game to finish with, 5 points? And have so much more of an impact than just 5 points was kind of crazy. And then I think, but you look back at the first game and Kayla Williams coming in, I always like to look at plus minus points just to see, okay, who made a big impact in a little bit of time. Kayla Williams played 14 minutes. She had the second best plus minus in the game. Plus 25 in her 14 minutes. She was all over the place, creating turnovers and whatnot. She got credited with 4 steals. She had 3 assists, 4 rebounds. She only had 2 points in the game, but I just thought her impact on the defensive end, and that's something that she's been doing recently, pretty frequently, but I just thought it really stood out in that game. And then you had the reserves come in. Malia Samuels comes in, hits both of her shots, hits a three, give her a little confidence. If someone was to go down with an injury, Kayla Williams, Malia Samuels can step in. Taylor Bigby knocked down a three. I think that's big for her. They need her to be a potential shooter, especially if teams go to more zone like we saw in that game. And then the India Otto moment was super, super special just to have that moment. But then also the players coming in off the bench, USC did not use their bench very much against Kansas. It was pretty much, we're going to stick with the starters. I mean, Juju goes 36 minutes. You got 11 minutes out of Bigby, 13 minutes out of Kayla Williams, and then Akinwafu takes over in that. So they weren't going to use a ton of bench in that game. They were sticking to the rotation, and they were able to make it work. And Mackenzie Forbes had struggled so much before that Pac-12 championship game. And even I think it was even before that, which the late threes in the overtimes against UCLA, I think really regained her confidence, and she's been outstanding for them since. The way that she was able to just turn any turnover by Kansas felt like just turned into a three-pointer by Mackenzie Forbes. And that was one of my other ones, is turning turnovers into points. In that game, Kansas, they had, I'm trying to find it here, 18 turnovers. USC turned them into 25 points off of turnovers. They had a 25-9 point off turnover advantage. They had 16, 2 minutes into the second quarter. The Kansas turnovers early is what buried them and got them in that big hole. And you wonder, if they take care of the basketball, and usually they have been a team that did take care of the basketball pretty well, if they took care of the basketball better, how different is that game? Because that late run now pushes them ahead. Now they're ahead by 6 points or something instead of being down by one, and the pressure becomes even more on USC. That stood out to me. And then answering the call was my third up, because when that game did get tight, there's no one on this roster with significant postseason experience. Rhea Marshall played last year. She's the only returning starter. Mackenzie Forbes played in the NCAA tournament 19 years ago when she was at Cal. None of the Ivies had any experience coming from the Ivy League. So how are they going to react? Texas A&M Corpus Christi, yeah, you're going to win that game. How are they going to react when that big run comes? And so I'm waiting for it, and that game gets super tight, and it's a one-point game, and I go, uh-oh, let's see what happens here. What happens on the very next possession? Juju Watkins drains the three. She had more lift in that shot than she had in many of her others. She knew the moment was there, and she made sure, that she got good lift on her shot, good arc on the shot, drains the three-pointer, and then it builds from there. She attacks the basket the next time, gets fouled. Juju Watkins stepped up in the moment. But she wasn't the only one. Obviously, Clarice Akinwafu with her defense, Mackenzie Forbes. It just, when the game got tight, you didn't see USC fall apart. And that's something that could easily have happened with the experience level of this group. Instead, they seem to, all right, it's go time now. And Juju Watkins found a different gear and kind of took over for a little segment, and then USC was able to pull away. So I thought that was really important to see for the potential of what this team could do this season.
Certainly. I agree. Want me to move to my downs?
Yep.
Starting with the middle of the game against Kansas, second and third quarter, getting outscored by 1 point. Basketball is a game of runs. You're not going to be perfect every game, especially in the round of 32 of the NCAA tournament. But I did think with the way USC played that first quarter and just watching the Kansas-Michigan game, it was pretty clear how much better USC was than Kansas. So to be outscored by a point in that middle frame there, I didn't think that was great. But obviously, it's all about how you respond, and USC responded really well. And then my other down, so it's great that they shot 43% from three, 13 of 30. You'll take that every game. But overall, shooting 37% from the field, they were not good from two-point range inside the arc, 25 of 67. Not very efficient on offense. Juju, 9 of 21. Mackenzie Forbes, 6 of 19. Got the job done, ended up winning comfortably by 18 points. But I think as this tournament goes on and you play better teams, it's not going to be easy, of course, but USC needs to be more efficient on offense. That was something that really stuck out to me, especially in that second and third quarter. Just a lot of missed shots, and I think you can get away with that at home against Kansas. I don't know if you can get away with that in the Sweet 16 in Portland against Baylor and potentially in the Elite Eight against a team like UConn.
Yeah, definitely. They got to win the rebound better. They got to rebound a little bit better. They lost the battle in that one. They were able to make more of their offensive rebounds. You know, they had 15 offensive rebounds, turned to 15 offense or second chance points compared to Kansas's 13 for 9. That one, I think, is a big deal for them, the rebounding, because that shows the physicality, the toughness, and that's something they want it. I think they were really bothered by the zone that Kansas threw at them. And I think that's something that, because of that, I would not be surprised if they see it again. So their zone offense needs to be better. That includes Rhea Marshall, Caitlin Davis, or Juju Watkins, whoever they put in the middle of the zone, it needs to be able to make that middle of the lane jumper. You know, that short jumper in the middle of the lane. Rhea Marshall had a couple she couldn't hit. Kristen Davis had one that was way off. Kristen Davis had been so good at that type of shot, and then just getting the ball in the middle of the lane and being able to attack in the past. So that was a little surprising to me that she didn't do a little more damage against the zone. They ended up putting Juju there. She was able to make a couple of those, but wasn't consistent. And she has to know that, hey, everyone's going to collapse on her basically. When she's in the middle of the zone, she's going to get 3 to 5 players collapsing. So she's got to find her teammates a little bit more. So, and then teammates got to knock down those open shots. Kayla Padilla, I think she was 2 of 4 in the game, or 3 of 6. I feel like she needs more opportunities when a team is in zone. Like that's a time when she should be able to get some open looks and run some plays to get her opportunities. Same thing with Taylor Bigby. She didn't get a shot off in the game. Like those are – now maybe they're keying on Kayla Padilla, but when Bigby comes in, like she's got to be able to be a zone breaker for them as well. And I think they didn't really have anyone. I know Kayla Williams attempted a couple against the zone. Like someone's got to be able to come off the bench and make those. So they need a zone breaker, a zone buster, if you will, to come in. Mackenzie Forbes was outstanding, but a lot of hers were transition threes. Those were not – I mean, she hit 6 threes, but I want to say at least 4 of those were transition, if not more. USC was credited with only 8 fast break points, but there's a difference between fast break and transition. A lot of hers were, defense was getting back and getting set, but she's still pulling up while they're not, in their set up in their zone. So that was a big one for me, is just the zone offense needs some more work. And that's Juju, that's Rhea, that's Caitlin Davis. That's basically the entire team. It was just, the offense bogged down, and that's when Kansas were able to make their run. And then late, USC was able to attack a little bit more. They put Juju in the middle, and she was able to attack, get some fouls. That was the big thing in this game. It's like, could they get Tyana Jackson in foul trouble? I don't know if you rewatched the game at all. I didn't know the stat at the time. The splits for Kansas when she's on the court versus off the court are just absurd. It was like plus 229 when she's on the court and minus 140 or something like that when she's off the court this season. So that was the key. And they got her into some foul trouble. She eventually fouls out, but I feel like they could have gone at her a little bit more and try to attack her to try to, exploit that weakness. Give credit to Kansas. I thought Samaya Nichols was really good. She's a freshman too. Man, that freshman class. across the nation. Just we just see more and more players just popping up and showing what they can do. It's just the freshman class is special overall, and Juju Watkins is the best one of them all. So the two downs I had were the zone offense and the rebounding. I thought they got to rebound a little bit better, and you know, whether it's, especially when a team goes in the zone, that's an opportunity for Akinwofu, Caitlin Davis, Ray Marshall to get some offensive boards with someone not getting a body on them. So that was a little bit disappointing to see them not really be able to take advantage of that a little bit more. But you know, we're picking nits right now with a team that's going to Sweet 16 for the first time in 30 years.
Definitely. I hear what you're saying about the rebounding. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from Ray and Marshall in that game. Just the four rebounds. I know Kansas has some bigger players. She did only play the 20 minutes, but she's not in there to be a primary scorer. She's in there more for her rebounding prowess. She did have two really nice blocks, and she made that stank face after she blocked them looking down at the opponent. I thought that was hilarious, and that was the picture that USC, either USC Athletics or USC Women's Basketball on Twitter used to announce that they'd won. That was their final score graphic, which was cool, but would have liked to have seen her rebound the ball a little more. But you're right, we're nitpicking teams into the Sweet 16 after winning at home by 18 points. That's pretty good, winning in the round of 32 by that margin.
Yeah, I think that she really set the tone. First play of the game was one of those blocks, and that really set the tone. She had, I think you said she had two blocks. How about Clarice Akinwofu? Five blocks in 13 minutes against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and then follows that up with a career high six blocks in 19 minutes against Kansas. I think her three steals she also had against Kansas were a career high. Nine rebounds in that game, an assist, no turnovers, 5 points. You know, she's got to make a couple more free throws, but besides that, well, what an outstanding performance for her coming off the bench. The other thing, I mentioned the rebounding numbers against Kansas. They only out-rebounded Texas A&M Corpus Christi 40-37. Like that's something they were really, you know, got to really attack. They really dominated that stat against UCLA, against Stanford, and that showed their toughness against those teams. So Texas A&M Corpus Christi was a smaller team, and they didn't really, you know, they should have been plus 10, plus 15, plus 20 in that game, especially with the amount of misses that they were creating. Instead, they gave up 18 offensive rebounds in that game. It didn't really hurt them at all because, you know, it's a 16 seed, but that's something that has to be addressed this week as they, you know, get ready to go to Portland. They should be going to Portland about the time we're recording this. At least that's what I was told, because that's why I'm going to get an interview this week for the third consecutive week. Not very excited about that, but I digress. Let's move to our Juice. We'll still do this segment because Isaiah Collier was in attendance. He was one of the dignitaries, as I called him, in attendance for the games. He was there with Caleb Williams and John Jackson. Caleb Williams was there for both games. John Wall was in attendance. Cheryl Miller was there for both games. Lincoln Riley stopped by. Matt Leinart. You know, just a ton of people want to see this Women of Troy team and want to see what Juju Watkins can do. So that was really cool to see. So that's our Isaiah Collier sighting there. But Juju Watkins, what stood out to you the most about her efforts in, you know, giving 23 points against Texas A&M Corpus Christi and then 28-11 with five assists and two steals against Kansas?
I have one basketball thought and one non-basketball thought. Against Kansas, she picked up two pretty quick fouls, and I thought she did a really nice job of playing despite being in some early foul trouble. We all know in the NCAA tournament, with it being one and done, you lose your out. That's so important, being able to play with two or three fouls and not picking up any cheap ones. And that just makes me think of the Arizona game on the road where USC eventually comes back and wins in the double overtime. But remember, Juju fouled out earlier, not early, but at the end of regulation in that one. And I think she's learned some lessons about how to play with foul trouble this season. So that was significant. And then she doesn't really smile a lot during the game because she's fierce and she's a great competitor. But before the game, when the PA person was doing the announcements, just the starting lineups, it was awesome to see her have a big smile on her face, go over and handshake with Aaliyah Gales. To me, it just seemed like she was really taking in the moment, the last game at the Galen Center against Kansas, smiling ear to ear during those warmups. Because, like I said, she doesn't smile a lot during the game. She has business to take care of. I enjoyed seeing that, seeing her have fun, seeing her being in the moment, seeing her enjoy one of the best parts of the college basketball experience in women's basketball hosting NCAA tournament games. That was awesome to see.
23 points against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, 28 points against Kansas. She picks up that second foul. I thought it was really humorous, I guess is maybe not the right word, but I thought it was interesting to see Lindsey Gottlieb, the next time there was a stoppage in the USC end, she was screaming across the court at the referee that had called the foul. Like, there's something else going on. Like, they're trying to inbound the ball. She's screaming, "No one wants to see her sitting over here. You can't call that. No one wants to." And she's right. No one wants to see her sitting on the bench. You know, it's a national television audience for, what, the fourth time this season, fifth time this season, maybe, for USC. Thanks a lot, Pac-12 Network. But it was a foul. You do have to call it.
Yeah, hey, a foul's a foul.
Yeah, a foul's a foul. Now, Juju, that's one of the things she's done this some throughout the season, is getting those fouls 90 feet away from the basket. Like, trying for the quick, you know, knock away type of thing to get a quick steal. And sometimes she picks up a foul. But she did a great job, like you said, of dealing with it. I thought it was after the game what stood out to me. And I know exactly what you're talking about with her not smiling, because all the photos I shoot, it's game face all the time, basically. She did smile when she came to the bench. She had a big hug for Lindsey Gottlieb when she checked out with a couple minutes left, or maybe less than a minute left. My photo galleries will be up in a little bit before, you know, as soon as this podcast is posted. But it was really cool to see that moment, them embracing together and the big smile on Juju's face. Because like you said, she does not smile very often. She does smile in the post-game pressers because she's super excited. And just seeing her, the interactions with her and Kinsey, both games, you know, in the post-game presser, like, they're reading the stat sheet and they're like giving each other five and dapping each other up. And the things that Juju Watkins said after the game, she said the reason what's so special about this team is the people. She wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And I thought it was really cool that she said she hopes when she looked at McKenzie Forbes, she said, "I hope when her career is done, when my career is done, that we've built a winning culture that we can come back and support the future women of Troy in a similar way that like Cheryl Miller and Tina Thompson and the others have done for this year's team." So just thinking about the lineage that she's creating, the winning culture, it's not just for this year, it's for years down the line. And the last thing that stood out to me, the last thing I saw was after the press conference, we come out, we're hanging out in the hallway, you hear the roar, and I go check out, I think you may have gone to get something out of your bag or something. I'm standing with Ahmad, I hear the roar and you hear the screaming of little kids. And it's Juju Watkins walking out the door, and I took a picture of it. There's like 100 people waiting outside, a lot of young kids trying to get her autograph and whatnot. But it was really like a pop star, you know, like a pop star is exiting a hotel type of moment is what it felt like. And, you know, it was the fans have found out that's where they're staying, and they're just trying to get that glimpse of them, maybe get an autograph or a wave or a selfie or whatever it may be. And everyone was waiting outside for Juju. And this is, I don't know, this is probably 30 minutes after a game. And you know, she goes out there and just is kind of swarmed by everyone. Now they had it blocked off for her and whatnot, but just goes out there and, you know, it's just that type of moment for a freshman. And the way she's handled everything this season is just, it's been, you know, phenomenal to see that she is not faded at all under the pressure. And actually, when the moments have been biggest, that's when she stepped up against Kansas, hitting that three and, you know, getting fouled the very next play. So I thought it was, you know, just emblematic of what the season has been and what is going to continue to come to Galen Center over the next couple of years as she continues her career at USC.
Totally agree. I'm excited for the future. And the future is now shotgun with the Sweet 16. Dean starting Saturday. What is she going to have up her sleeve next? I find myself asking myself that pretty much every day.
Yeah, so we'll see. We're going to take our break. We'll come back. We'll look forward to what's going to happen this weekend when USC heads up to Portland.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Like I said before, just make sure you put in the triple-double or the basketball pod in the headline to make sure it gets directed at us. Connor, where's this team stand right now?
Where do they stand in terms of...
Where do they stand? What 28-5, I believe the women of Troy are. You know, they entered the NCAA tournament number 3 in the AP poll. They are one of 16 teams remaining. That's where they stand.
You caught me off guard with that question.
Got him, folks. they're one of 16, one of 5 Pac-12 teams remaining. Now, that will change this upcoming weekend because there will only be 4 after this weekend. Now, is it going to be 4 Pac-12 teams? That would be quite the statement. But 5 Pac-12 teams make it to the Sweet 16. I think that shows the depth of the conference this year. I think that shows the, you know, how dynamic this conference was. And for USC to come out with the tournament title and to come out second overall during the regular season just even further validates what they've done. And some of these teams didn't have a lot of experience in the postseason. Other ones did. But we're seeing everyone kind of succeed. And I was a little bit surprised that Utah didn't win. You wonder... You know, unfortunately, Utah went through some racial episodes and stuff in Idaho where they were staying 30 minutes away from Spokane playing at Gonzaga. You wonder if that had an impact. I wouldn't have been surprised if they would have made it too. You know, Colorado made it through as a 5 seed, and I wouldn't have been surprised if Utah would have made it through as a 5 seed as well. The entire season we've been talking about, there are 6 teams are head and shoulders above. Arizona won a couple games as well early in the tournament. It was good to see them get in and get their opportunity. But the Pac-12 is representing. but USC doesn't really care about the Pac-12 now. It's all about yourself. But I did think it was interesting that Lindsey Gottlieb mentioned that Tara Vanderveer started a group text with all the coaches, and it's like, you know, we played in the toughest conference, you know, let's go show them type of thing. And so that was kind of cool nugget that she gave. But the Trojans head to Portland, where they are in a couplet, you want to call it. They will play Baylor on Saturday at, remind me what time they are playing at, 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. I've got it lodged in my head at 5:30 since I will be watching on the East Coast. 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. The winner of that game will take on the winner of the UConn matchup against, I'm blanking right now, I don't have the bracket pulled up in front of me.
Duke, I believe.
UConn, Duke, correct. Duke upset, got an upset win over Ohio State. Kara Lawson and that team. They actually have a Sierra Canyon player on their team as well, Vanessa DeJesus. Unfortunately, she's out this season with an injury. So would have been, I don't know if she played with Juju Watkins. I can't remember. I remember covering Vanessa and writing a story on her at one point for the LA Times, but she would not be able to play. But we'll see if Duke can pull off another upset against UConn. You know, no one's giving Duke a chance. We'll see. Paige Beckers has been really special as well. If the higher seeds prevail, then there will be a matchup between Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins. And quite possibly the winner of that matchup would face Caitlin Clark in the Final Four. So you talk about star power, Caitlin Clark or potentially Angel Reese in that LSU team or the UCLA team, who doesn't really have the star power, just has a bunch of really good players. So it's going to be a special time this weekend at Portland and then eventually in Cleveland in the Final Four. What stands out to you about this Baylor group? What have you, you know, looking at their stats and stuff, I don't know if you've got a chance to catch any of their games so far this season. What stands out about Baylor to you?
Well, first of all, they were undefeated for a long time. And then to end their undefeated streak, Kansas blew them out at home. So the team that USC just beat at home has a blowout win over Baylor already this season. And that was no injuries, no nothing for the Bears. They just didn't play well. They're a team where if they get over, I think, the 65-point mark, there's something like 25-4. So if USC can limit them defensively, that's huge. But they like to score. They shoot a lot of threes. They're a three-point shooting team. They're a good rebounding team. The game against Kansas, for whatever reason, they didn't rebound really well. But those two things stand out to me, the three-point shooting, the rebounding, and then they're deep. They're deeper than USC. They played 9 players in the rotation in their win against Virginia Tech. So they're going to have a lot of players that they can throw at a Mackenzie Forbes. They can throw at a Juju Watkins. I think this is a game where you need a little bit of scoring from Caitlin Davis, a little bit of scoring from Kayla Padilla. I don't know if this Baylor team, you can rely on Juju to really completely carry the load, but I probably felt that same way against Stanford, and Juju scored 51 points that game. So I'm sure she's capable of overcoming a lot of these players being thrown at her, but that jumped out to me too. The fact that Baylor does have a lot of bodies, a lot of players that their coaching staff trusts. USC will have their work cut out for them, but I think like the Kansas game, this is a winnable game for USC. To me, Baylor, I don't think it's a game where I look at it like, oh, this could really go either way. I think USC should win this game. I believe they're favored by 3.5. Going to need to be playing their best basketball, but they should move on to the Elite Eight.
Interestingly, they're a good rebounding team, and their leading rebounder is 5'11".
Yeah.
Aya Blackwell, I believe is how you pronounce it. She's got 258 rebounds in the season. She's averaging 8 rebounds at 5'11". So someone's got to put a body on her. In particular, Sarah Andrews kind of runs things for them. She, you know, she has 129 assists on the season. She, you know, can shoot the three as well. She's been pretty consistent for them throughout the year. 5'6", though. So they don't have the biggest starting lineup for, you know, to go against USC. So how will USC try to use their size? USC is usually not a much bigger team. How can they take advantage of that? You know, it'll be quickness versus size a little bit in that regard. But I'm curious to see how USC kind of approaches that, because looking at their roster, I mean, it's 5'6", 5'7", 5'11", 6', 6'1". And so USC is going to have a height advantage there. Baylor is really good against three-point defense. They're ninth in the nation in three-point percentage defense, allowing teams to only shoot 26%. So that is a potential area where USC, you know, can they knock down some shots? If they can't knock down shots, they could be in big trouble. This is a team that can score the basketball. And like you said, when they score is when they're, you know, when they don't score is when they're in trouble. They average 75 points a game this season. They can knock down some threes. It's not their primary point of offense, but they can do it. They have several different players that can hit threes. They're an offense that can attack and attack quickly. And so I'm curious to see how USC approaches this with having a size advantage. Do they try to slow things down? You know, USC likes to run and play tempo and, you know, speed things up when they get turnovers and stuff. But do they change their game plan against this Baylor team that finished the season 26-7, 12-6 in the Big 12? Obviously, there's a pedigree of winning in this program from the years when Kim Mulkey was there, when Brittany Griner was there, the potential, national champions in some of those years. None of these players were around for that. So, you know, what is their experience like and they get in this big type of situation, and who is going to have a home court advantage? Can enough USC fans get up to Portland or come down from Seattle or that live in the Portland area in the Pacific Northwest? Can enough USC fans come out and create a home court advantage for USC? That's something I'm curious to see. Or will Baylor have people that travel and outnumber USC? That could be a big factor. I think just, you know, having that support, that's been huge for USC all season, and you would like to see it once again for them to see if they can, if they can go about, you know, trying to make a continue this run and you know, make it to the Elite Eight and then potentially the Final Four. If they were to make it to the Elite Eight, what do you know about Duke? What do you know about UConn? You got to watch UConn beat your Syracuse Orange. So what stood out? And I know you watched that game. What stood out? I've watched UConn a couple times this season. You know, Paige Bueckers obviously is the star of the show, but that's not it. They're not a one-man crew there or one-woman crew.
No, I you're right. They do have a complete team. What stands out is just Gino Auriemma after the game getting up on his soapbox and saying, I know Caitlin Clark, I know Juju Watkins, but Paige Bueckers is the best player in the country. So I think if that ends up being the matchup, USC against a UConn, that's sort of like a game where everyone is going to watch and who really is in Caitlin Clark's league. I think that's sort of what we'll know coming out of that game. Juju Watkins, Paige Bueckers, of course, so much else goes into this game. It's not just about the two players, but I think if that is the matchup, it's a monumental game for women's college basketball because Caitlin Clark gets a lot of the pub, but Juju Watkins, she, in a lot of people's eyes and in mine included, will be up next. And Paige Bueckers, because of her injury history, has been sort of the forgotten great, if you will. And I think she's going to have a chip on her shoulder. She knows all about Juju. That's going to be an awesome, awesome game. And the winner, I think that'll go a long way to, we talk a lot about legacies on this show. I think it's a legacy kind of game for Juju, a legacy kind of game for Paige Bueckers. That would be really cool.
Yeah. It could be a really awesome matchup. Could even be the first of multiple, We'll see how each of their careers play out. The player that really stands out to me, Nika Mule, just runs everything. She's third in the nation in assists for UConn. She runs everything the way that Gino Auriemma wants. Like whenever they get flustered, they get the ball to her, let her run things, run the offense, set something up for Bueckers. And Bueckers has been phenomenal in the second half of the season. I feel like she's really come on. I feel like early in the season, there was a little bit of where getting the rust off, and then she's gotten better and better as the season's progressed. She's third in the nation in scoring. As far as points total, she's got 785. She's only averaging 21.8 per game. Only. Let's put that in quotes. So that's 12th in the nation, but just overall points. And she's been really good the last few games as well for UConn. You know, it's turned it up in the postseason, and that's what makes them very difficult to beat. Aaliyah Edwards also is an option down low that, you know, you start paying as much attention as you can to Paige Beckers, and Aaliyah Edwards starts cleaning up everything and making a bunch of buckets, and they can throw the ball down low to her, do different things. Duke, on the other hand, I feel like UConn has multiple options, multiple weapons. Duke is a very team-oriented. They have only one player in double figures, Reagan Richardson, and she's only averaging 12 points. And then they have three other players that are averaging 9. So it's just like it's a pick your poison type of thing. It's less star driven like it is with UConn and Paige Beckers and Aaliyah Edwards. Whereas Duke is just whoever is getting their shots up, whoever's hot is kind of going to it. You're not, if someone's cold, you're not going to keep going to them like you would Paige Beckers or Juju Watkins or whatnot. So they got the big win over UConn. That was a huge. Ohio State. That was a big win for them. Baylor also got an upset. They upset Virginia Tech, though. How much of an upset actually was it? They won that game. Did that game go to overtime? I can't remember off the top of my head. They won because of a three-pointer from a deep half-court shot. So they end up winning by three. Looking it up, it looks like they did not go to overtime in that one. But the reason why they won by 3 points ended up being, I think it was the end of the third quarter, maybe it was the end of the second, that they hit a half-court buzzer beater at the quarter break, and that proved to be the 3 points that was the difference in that. It was a tight game back and forth in Blacksburg. It was a tough place to play. USC played there last year in the NCAA tournament, but they end up getting the win there, and a portion of it can be contributed to a big buzzer beater. Now, Elizabeth Kirtley, Virginia Tech's All-American, did not play. She was out with an ACL injury, so that is a big part of what allowed Baylor to advance, but they were able to get the upset. So in the Sweet 16, in this bracket, in the quadrant, you have two big, the 2 seed and the 4 seed both got beat. So we'll see if that ends up leading to USC versus UConn, or if we see a couple more upsets in this bracket.
Duke sort of reminds me, the Carol Lawson at Duke sort of reminds me of like the East Coast, Lindsey Gottlieb a little bit. Hired a Duke to transform the program, has the NBA experience. So that could be a really fun coaching matchup if Duke somehow gets by UConn. But I don't think either of us expect that to happen, right, Shotgun?
No, that's not what I'm picking. If I'm picking UConn versus USC in the Elite Eight, and it would be the first Elite Eight for USC in 30 years as well, or more than 30 years. I can't remember the 94. I got to start checking my thing.
I think 94 they did make the Elite Eight, though, right? And then they lost to Louisiana State or Louisiana Tech.
That sounds about right. Louisiana Tech, I randomly, like 2 months ago, I decided, you know what, I saw it somewhere, and I was like, I'm just going to watch this 1984, I think it was the 84 title game, USC versus Louisiana Tech, Cheryl Miller versus Kim Mulkey on the other side as the point guard for Louisiana Tech. And so I just got sucked in, and I'm like, all right, I'm watching this, seeing Cheryl Miller, get her points down low and, the way she played. So that was really fun. That's our preview for this week. I think that's going to wrap it up for us. Connor, what's the most important thing for USC with the matchups they could face this weekend? What's the biggest thing you want to see from them to have success, to potentially make it to the Final Four, make it all the way to Cleveland, where they would potentially, that would then match up with either Caitlin Clark or UCLA or LSU. So it's going to be a tough matchup for anyone that comes out of the bracket. But what would it take for USC to do that this weekend?
I've talked a lot about defense setting the tone for the women of Troy on this show. So I start with the defense. Baylor against Virginia Tech shot 43% from the field. If USC holds them to under 40%, I think they have a really good chance of winning. Baylor, they're a streaky team when the shots are falling, especially from deep. That's when they win their games, when they score the points. Like I said earlier, that they're not going to win a defensive slugfest, and I think USC can win a defensive slugfest. I start defensively. I think under Lindsey Gottlieb, they've done an excellent job. Towards the end of the year, we saw some, I don't know if slip-ups is the right word, but Arizona had a good shooting game, and Colorado at the Galen Center shot pretty well. Kansas, not as much, and Texas A&M Corpus Christi, not as much. So USC's been off to a good start defensively in this NCAA tournament. If they can keep that going against a really good Baylor team, I like their chances.
Yeah, maybe we saw a little bit of fatigue setting in towards that, the end of the season, as far as just on the defensive end. USC held Kansas at 35%. They held Texas A&M Corpus Christi at 33%. So You know, and obviously the big quarters. It's not just the percentage, it's also the big quarters. First quarter against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, they were up 21-2 before a buzzer beater, so 4 points that they gave up there. The first quarter against Kansas, 9 points. And then when the game was on the line, only 9 points in the fourth quarter. So those were really big. I think you're absolutely correct. If their defense plays well, because they're also creating turnovers. They created, I think it was 37 turnovers this weekend between the two games, and they ended up scoring 45 points off those turnovers. So if they're creating turnovers the way they've been doing and they're locking down, so it's not like they're shooting 50%, we're just the times that we're not able to get a turnover, you're holding them to 33%, 35%. That is a winning formula. So we'll see if they can do that against some even better teams than they played so far. Like you said, though, Kansas has beat Baylor, so the transitive property means USC should be able to go in and win that game, right?
That's how I see it.
We'll find out this weekend. Once again, that game will be on Saturday. The game will be on ESPN, I believe, at 2:30 p.m. Pacific time, 5:30 if you're on the East Coast like me. Make sure you're checking it out before you're getting ready for your Easter Sunday. Should be a huge matchup. And then the winner of that will play on Monday. The times have not been declared for that, but expect USC, if they were to win and they were to play against UConn, that will be the primetime matchup, in some form or fashion, whether it's West Coast primetime or East Coast primetime. It will be a primetime matchup, be in the evening with Caitlin Clark playing right before them, potentially, like you just saw this past week, this past weekend, the Kansas game, Caitlin Clark and Iowa played right before USC. I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast, though, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. Please help us out. Like, subscribe, share, leave us a review. 5 stars. You know we're 5 stars. Just like all those defense linemen USC's been getting. Also, we always welcome your feedback, comments, questions at podcast@uscfootball.com. Connor, any final thoughts?
Fight on, baby.
I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to my co-host, Connor Morissette. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to everyone that packed the Galen Center. It was a really fun weekend. It was really fun. I was really excited to be able to get out for that. And I'm looking forward to the potential of USC playing in Cleveland. I'll be back out there for that. If so, unfortunately, with the Easter holiday, not able to make it to Portland. A lot of expensive flights. Apparently, people want to go to Portland this weekend. But we hope that you guys will join us for the next episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast.